is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Head Start Basketball's cutthroat game building program debuts on Tuesday nights in September. Players in grades 5 through 10, both boys and girls, you won't want to miss this one. Registration is open now at www.headstartbasketball.com.
We've got 12 players on our high school varsity team, and I have a stack of 3x5 index cards on my desk. And I've got every kid's name on each one of those cards. And I try to talk to three of them a day in my office about something other than basketball.
Dell Leonard has been the Mountain Home Arkansas High School girls varsity basketball coach for the past 19 seasons. The Lady Bomber basketball team has reached the state playoffs 18 years in a row. During Dell's time as the girls basketball coach, the Lady Bombers have reached the Final Four in the Arkansas state playoffs 8 times. Coach Leonard attended North Arkansas Community College in Harrison, Arkansas from 1987 to 1990 and joined the United States Marine Corps in 1992. He was an active duty Marine for 2 years and then entered the Marine Corps Reserves from 1994 to 2002. In 1995, Coach Leonard graduated from Ouachita Baptist University in Arkadelphia, Arkansas with a Bachelor of Science in Education degree. In 2004, he earned his Master's of Science in Education degree from Arkansas State University in Jonesboro, Arkansas. During his time as a student at North Arkansas Community College and Ouachita Baptist University, he was a 4-year letterman on the baseball team. Dell has coached other sports besides basketball throughout his career at Mountain Home. He was an assistant coach on the 1997 5A State Championship Bomber baseball team, and in 2008 and 2010 as the head softball coach, he led the Lady Bomber softball team to the 6A state championship. Coach Leonard was also the Mountain Home head boys and girls golf coach from 2015 to 2018. After you're finished listening to the show, hop over to iTunes and leave us a 5-star rating and review to help others in the basketball community find the Hoopheads podcast. Subscribe now on your favorite podcast app so you never miss an episode. You can find every episode we've ever recorded on our website, www.hoopheadspod.com. Grab a notebook and pen so you're prepared to take some notes as you listen to this episode with Dell Leonard, girls varsity head coach at Mountain Home High School in the state of Arkansas. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel. And tonight we are pleased to welcome to the podcast from Mountain Home, Arkansas, the girls head varsity basketball coach, Dell Leonard. Dell, welcome to the podcast.
I really appreciate it. I'm very humbled to be on here and thankful to my good friend, Greg White, for making the connection. And I'm really excited to talk to you guys. I'm a big fan of the podcast.
Well, thank you. Yeah, Greg's been instrumental. As anybody who's listened to the show knows, he's been instrumental in helping us to grow the podcast. And he's been on multiple times. And also, we can attribute a lot of our guests, including yourself, to Greg's recommendations and connections. So shout out there to Greg. Thanks for all your help in helping us to grow what we're doing here. Dell, I want to start out by asking you how you got into the game of basketball as a kid and what made you fall in love with the game when you were younger?
Honestly, I have to say that my brother, my younger brother and I were a couple years apart, and it's basically all we did was play sports. And whether it was, you know, outside on a dirt court, on a goal that we tried to make sure we got it 10 feet, probably got it wrong, but it was just my mom raised us, and there's my little brother and I, and then my two sisters, and we, you know, of course you guys have heard all the stories about, you know, walking to the school backwards in the snow, and we didn't have, you know, video games and all that stuff. And from all of us older guys who didn't have it as easy as kids have it today. But, you know, my brother and I just played. I mean, we were outside from the time we got up in the summer and, you know, and hated that dreaded call of mom to tell us to come in. You know, we wanted to stay out and play. And then even during school, you know, and just my love of sports came from, you know, he and I just playing all the time. And then I had a high school basketball coach who was, you know, a father figure to me and just a great human being, great person, and Dennis Copeland. And he had such a huge influence on me. And I just, you know, I didn't really play organized sports until about the seventh grade. And we went to a small school, and he was our coach, seventh grade through 12th. You know, I think that he epitomized the coach that made kids love the sport. And he helped me fall in love with basketball, and I played baseball as well, and he was also my baseball coach.
Wow. So was he the coach for the seventh grade team, the eighth grade team, and the JV and varsity?
Everybody. Yeah.
Wow. Holy cow.
Yeah. I think we had 32 people in our graduating class, and which is a total, 180 to, the school I coach at now, which is one of the, one of the larger classifications, or in the second to largest classification in Arkansas. So, he was a huge influence on me as far as my love of the game, both games, baseball and basketball. And I always thought that I would go on and play Major League Baseball like so many kids do. And I actually played college baseball. I did not play basketball. And, I'll get into that later on when we talk about, getting into coaching and so forth.
So, man, he had to be a busy guy coaching all those teams.
He was.
That's crazy.
Well, and not only that, he coached the Pee Wee programs, and, he invested in the grade school and everything. So, that's the way they did it back then.
Yeah, that's incredible. What do you remember specifically about him that you still hold with you today? Something maybe that piece of advice he said, or just the way that he went about coaching you guys when you were younger? Talk about some of the things that maybe you remember specifically that still have an impact on you and who you are today.
Well, he just had and has tremendous character. And I actually ended up obviously graduating from that school, and we kept in touch. My younger brother played for him as well, so I would go back to watch my brother play and still be around Coach Copeland. And after I finished my journey in college, and I actually had a little, I played JUCO baseball, and then I actually joined the Marine Corps and had a little gap between my first and second year of college and then my third and fourth year. And so when I graduated from college, I needed a job. And he actually at the time was at Mountain Home, and he helped me get on at Mountain Home. And so I learned from him as a player, but also got to be his assistant and learn from him as an assistant. And, the one thing I remember him saying to me that just resonated with me more than anything was just be honest, be yourself and be honest and tell the truth. And that I always remember that conversation in the office that day with him. So he impacted me as a player and as my boss.
Yeah. Honesty, I think, is something that obviously it's important in our day-to-day lives and our relationships, and everything that we do is built on it. But I think one of the things that sometimes coaches overlook is when you're having communication with players and how important honesty is with your players, just in terms of playing time, in terms of what things you need to get better at or what things you already are good at and how you can improve. And it's easy sometimes as a coach to maybe not tell a kid the truth, because it can be painful sometimes for kids to hear the way that the things that they need to do to improve. And not everybody likes to hear that kinds of criticism. And sometimes, as you said earlier, kids today maybe take that differently than kids in the past may have. And so I think it's important. The really good coaches that I've been around and the ones that we've had the privilege to talk to here on the podcast are the guys who are willing to be honest with their players. And I think that's a great lesson that you were able to take away from him.
Well, you've got to, and they've got to know their role and, what their parents feel like their role should be might be different than what you know it should be as the head coach. And you've got to be able to talk to them. And it's, I don't know how you do it, but I think it's, when we talk about building strong relationships, but communication with players is so important. And I think the really good coaches can take a tough situation, call a player in and say, this is kind of, they might be seeing things totally different than you see them or you see their role. And the really good coaches have a way of being honest without being hurtful. And they, I just think I've seen guys that, and try to learn from the coaches that by the time that kid left your office, they thought it was their idea and not yours.
Absolutely. And, I think you're 100% right.
And they bought in, they were buying in. And, you know, coaching girls is something that I never thought I would do, first of all. And I'll get into later how that all happened. But, you know, the girls don't really, I mean, I think that all kids, they want to know you care about them. I mean, we hear that. And I think you guys are the best at talking about how important relationships are. And I really wholeheartedly mean that. And I can tell you, when I graduated from college and I had the opportunity to become a head coach, really after a short stint as an assistant, I wasn't really ready, but I mean, I'm not going to tell you that winning wasn't something that dominated my thoughts. And so, and it wasn't that I didn't care about the kids that I coached at that time, but you know, after you do it for 7 to 10 years, you know, you start to really, I guess, I don't know, you know how special and you understand that the relationships are the most important thing. And honest to goodness, I feel like that 100%, that's all I care about. I definitely want to win. If we're keeping score, I want to win and we want to win, but I'm definitely more concerned about that young lady and what kind of future she's going to have.
Yeah. I think there's an evolution that most coaches that we've talked to, and I know this is true for me, that as young coaches, we get caught up in that competitive spirit of wanting to win. And I don't think that ever goes away. Just like you're describing, it's still, I'm sure you want to win just as badly today as the first day you stepped foot into the coaching box. But there's also an understanding, I think, that comes with age, that you begin to realize that sports in general and coaching in particular, is the relationship piece of it is so, so important, not just for building your success today on the basketball court or the baseball field or wherever, but it also is so important for the development of those young people that you're being put in charge of. And I think that that's something that there's very few coaches, at least ones that I've seen, that are ages 23, 24, 25, that have that perspective right away coming out of the gate. I think it takes some time, because most of us who are coaches at some point came from some type of playing background, whether it was playing the sport that we ended up coaching or playing a different sport, or, you know, no matter what level you ended up playing at, I think everybody who played is competitive. And if you're getting into coaching, you're competitive. And so I think that dominates the early part of your career in most cases. And then you come to this realization that it's important to understand those relationships are key to both the success right now, but also to the long-term success of your players. And that really is what it's all about.
Sure. And, you know, I think the biggest win you get as a coach is when you get that letter from a former player or that phone call. And, you know, I think it was the book was John Grisham, or I believe, or some, it was Bleachers, the book Bleachers, and it's about a coach. And I had a player that I had actually decided to quit her senior year. And we had a great relationship. She left on good terms. And she wrote me the nicest letter, that because they had to do a book report on the book Bleachers. And she sent me a letter, said, "Coach, this reminded me of you. And I just wanted to thank you for," and she went into a lot of things, and it was really classy. And, you know, those things, and, you know, when they invite you to their weddings, and, or you hear about the birth of their first child or whatever, those are huge moments for me. And I, you know, when you've been coaching at one place as long as I've been at Mountain Home, you know, there's a whole lot of people, and well, it doesn't matter if you're at one place or several different places. When you've coached for 23 years, there's a lot of kids that, you know, come into your life.
Yeah, no question. I think that's one of the best parts of being a coach, is when you get that phone call or that letter and the player says, "Hey, coach, I remember what you said to me. I remember the way you made me feel. I remember our time together." And that's something that I know I've had this conversation with some of the other coaches that we've had on, but it's very rare that when you go back and, you know, looking back at your playing career, you don't necessarily remember what was our record or what did we do in this game against this team. It's more you remember the relationships with your coach, with your teammates. You remember the moments as opposed to the specifics of any individual game. And I think that's really what, when you get that letter, that phone call from a player, that's what they're remembering. They're remembering that relationship. And there's nothing better. I think if there's one thing that I would tell a young coach just starting out is talk to a coach who's been in the business for a long time and ask them about what you just described, the one phone call or the one letter that they remember from that player that they had a special relationship with. And I think if you could start every coach out with one of those stories when they were 22, 23 years old, I think you'd end up maybe accelerating that growth rate in terms of coaches understanding how important those relationships are.
Sure. And I think too, in fairness, I think that as when we have our own children, you know, it helps us, you know,
absolutely,
kind of relate to things like that too. And one of the things, Mike and Jason, that we started doing at Mountain Home last year was our first year. We started having an alumni game and we invited back former players to play against our current team and then former coaches to coach that team.
Oh, that's awesome.
And you know, the lady that I got to come in and be an assistant for 3 years is a Hall of Fame coach in Arkansas and Janet Wood. And, you know, I owe her so much. And she came back with our junior high coach who had retired, who had coached for 33 years. So they were still are legends in our community. And they came back and coached the alumni. But kind of in reference to what you were saying, we had girls, we decided kind of last minute, game's over, and we brought every alumni player in the locker room with our current team. And we had girls standing, ladies who have families who are very successful, standing up and giving credit to our program. And I'm talking, they would get emotional and start to cry. And it was tough. I mean, it's almost tough for me to even talk about it right now. And it just, you know, it makes you proud. And I feel like that, you know, we have a really, really good culture right now. And I'm very proud to be part of it.
Yeah, that's powerful stuff. So what were some of the things that those women shared who had come back as alumni? What were some of the things that they, or memories or thoughts that they shared with your current team?
I remember a former player standing up and just, she's very successful in our community, very successful business person. And she said, you know, at the time you don't get it at the time. And, you know, you're having to work your tail off. And in our league, we play against West Memphis, you know, a lot of Little Rock schools, a lot of Northeast, and we're not near as athletic as most of the teams in our league. So we have to, you know, we work really hard at what we do. And she talked about how you don't realize that as a kid, but then, you know, she talked about how it helped her get through adversity in life and get through college. And she's, you know, she's over a lot of people in her current job and how she refers back to the lessons she learned in basketball. And then, the toughest part for me was when my daughter stood up and she just graduated from college. And there were several ladies that spoke. And I think when one spoke, it may have maybe motivated or reminded a kid of something. And they spoke, but my daughter just, I mean, cried like a baby and talked about, you know, how much she missed it. And, you know, she just currently graduated from college and just got her first teaching job. And it was, you know, you get caught up and every day we got to do this. We got to work on press offense. We got to develop this kid's footwork. You know, you get caught up in all of that stuff. But then when you go through something like that, it's pretty awesome.
Yeah. There's nothing better than that. Hearing it from your own daughter had to be tremendous. I know that just thinking about that moment for you and what that must have been like and the amount of pride that you had not only in your daughter but also just in your program and the fact that people are willing to stand up and say, hey, this is really what it's all about and what Coach Leonard was able to do for me, and to tell your current players that, hey, you're part of something that's very unique and very special and something that you're going to remember for the rest of your life. And it's going to continue to have an impact. I don't think there's anything possibly that could measure up to being able to hear that from former players. And in this case, from your daughter, that had to be for you one of the most, I would think, special moments of your coaching career.
It was great. And, you know, in 20 years as a head coach, and I guess actually this coming year will be the 20th year, but we've been to 8 Final Fours or semifinal games, and we just have not been able to get over the hump. In one of these days, I hope we do. If we don't, then that's not what's going to define us. But we've been consistent as far as going pretty deep in the playoffs. But out of all of those huge wins throughout the years, that ranked up there, right up there with them. And you're right. You're absolutely right with everything you say.
Yeah, that's very cool. I want to jump back to something that you mentioned, because I think it's probably a pretty important part of your story. And that is, you mentioned that you joined the Marine Corps. So tell us a little bit about how that came to be, why that came to be, and then maybe we talk a little bit about what your experiences were like while you were in the Marines.
Well, my brother and I were living together, and I just finished my sophomore year at college, and I played 2 years of junior college baseball, and we came home we were actually living together, and we had decided that we would go to work and maybe take a little bit of a break. I was a little bit burned out, to be honest with you. And so we decided that we would go to work, and we figured out that was, and, you know, having a house and utility payments, we figured out that was a little bit tougher than what we thought.
And, the adult world was a little bit different than what you thought.
And, it's honest to God. The first, you know, of course we're still over, you know, in the Middle East right now, as our country is, but it was a Desert Shield, you know, right after 9/11, you know, and we ended up going into the first part of the war, and Desert Shield happened. And my brother, we talked, and we were struggling financially, and we were tired of, you know, there were a lot more bills at the end of the month than there was check and payment. And so I said, I think I'm going to join the Marine Corps. And he said, I think I'm going to join the Air Force. He was a lot smarter than me. And, you know, I say that, but I have tremendous pride in being able to go through the Marine Corps. And he went in and enlisted, and I went in and enlisted. And next thing we knew, we were going to boot camp, and I had, you know, active duty that I had to finish, and I finished it. He went a little bit longer active duty than I did, and he stayed in the Air Force. And after I finished my active duty, I ended up joining the reserves, which gave me the opportunity to go back and finish college with the GI Bill and play baseball. And I had a coach reach out to me and went down for a tryout. And next thing I know, I'm back in college, and I finishing up my time in the reserves, and got to get my degree and serve my country at the same time. And I finished up my Marine Corps duty in 1999, or actually, no, I'm sorry, it was 2001, and finished it up while I had started coaching. And I'm very, very proud that I had the opportunity to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. First of all, thank you for your service. I know that.
Thank you.
I have. Yeah, absolutely. I have my brother-in-law was just retired from the Army recently. So, again, I have a tremendous amount of respect for anyone who's willing to serve our country in the military. What did you take away from your time in the military that has helped you as a teacher and a coach as you move forward in your career?
Well, I think that the correlation with the way that we did things in the Marine Corps and the way that we have to do things at Mountain Home, when you're lined up toe to toe, maybe with someone who's probably most of the time bigger and faster and stronger than you, is that we had to make sure that we were precise with everything that we did. And we have to be really good at, you know, those eight standards that you guys know, that Coach Showalter and Coach Locke and Coach Shablon, those guys talk about at Snow Valley, and those eight things of whole team defense, whole team offense, footwork, ball handling, rebounding, screening, passing, shooting. And I don't know how many I've listed right there, but we have to be really, really good at those. And we have to be so disciplined in everything that we do. And I think that's probably the discipline and the just doing things exactly the way they're supposed to be done, when they're supposed to be done. I think that's the correlation that probably helped me more than anything that I was able to take into coaching and from the Marine Corps.
So when you take that and you apply it to your team, what does that look like for you on a day-to-day basis? That discipline piece and making sure that kids are doing what they're supposed to be do and what they're supposed to do when they're supposed to do it.
Well, it starts for us in the classroom and our team GPA, and I'm not stretching this one.
Go ahead and brag. Come on, brag.
We were academic state champions last year, and our GPA was somewhere around a 3.75, I believe. And this year we followed up, and if we don't win, then I don't know who is going to win, but our team GPA last year was 3.99. And
Sounds like you need to take some more AP classes and honors classes. You got to get these girls. They must be slacking off taking regular classes.
Hey, man, we've got some. We have some kids that do take some AP, and that's probably what really kicks it up there higher than anything. But, you know, I'm telling you guys, and I don't mean to get off subject, but we travel. Like, our shortest road trip is 3 hours one way.
Holy cow.
And then when you start going to Memphis, it's 5 hours one way.
My gosh.
So we leave like at 9:30 a.m. or 10 a.m. for some of our road trips. And they better be back in that desk at 8 a.m. for the next day's class. And, you know, they have to do a lot of work on the bus and a lot of studying. And here's the deal. We have a lot of kids that are two and three sport athletes. So it's not just basketball season that they're missing class. So it's pretty big to be that strong academically. So we really push that. And I think that's what we talk about is number one, and just working hard. But, you know, I listened to a podcast with Chris Beard one time, and it was, you know, he talked about the first time he met Coach Knight, and, you know, I guess Coach Knight had come to watch the JUCO he was at, and he was taking him back to the airport, and, you know, they ate dinner, and before Coach Knight got on the plane, he said, you know, Coach, he thought, this is my only shot to say something to him. So he said, hey, you know, I want you to know that I know you got 1,000 people out there or more that, you know, but if you ever have something come open, nobody's going to work harder than me, and I would love the opportunity. And he said, and I'll never forget the story. He said that Coach Knight was eating a piece of pizza, and, he just kind of put the pizza down and took the napkin and wiped his mouth. And as he can, so I won't say the exact words that he said, but he said, Chris, I don't doubt that you work hard. He goes, all coaches work hard. But what I want to know is, can you work hard and get things done? And for us, I think probably early in my career, we worked really hard and didn't get a lot done, you know, and I was just, a green behind the ears coach, and hey, this drill looks awesome, or this offense is awesome. And I hadn't really developed or set into my philosophy on a lot of things. And we worked really, really hard at not getting a lot done. So for us, you know, academics and work your tail off, but at the same time, make sure you're working your tail off and get things done. And then going into, you know, I've got a little thing I say with the kids about, you know, we really can't rely on luck. We've got to be really, really prepared and take advantage of opportunities. And going back to that talk in the locker room from the alumni, I felt like that reached out and touched so many of our kids. We were picked to finish 7 out of 8 teams in our league. And we ended up third, and then we're 1 point away from the state championship game. And I still think that two things, that talk from those older girls, the alumni, kind of spurred that team to believe. And then everything else that I've mentioned about the discipline and all of that stuff, it has a lot to do with why they were successful.
Yeah, I'm sure it does. And if you can instill that on a daily basis. And then obviously you've been there a long time, so you get to instill that day by day and then year by year. And eventually it just becomes a staple of what you do day in and day out. So let's, before we get completely dive into the nitty gritty of the program today, let's go back to your first opportunity to coach and talk about when you started thinking that coaching was going to be a direction that maybe you wanted to go once you were done with your college career as a baseball player and you graduated. And you're talk about when you decided, hey, coaching is something that I think I want to get into.
Well, honestly, I talked about, I loved baseball and I loved basketball, but I knew I was better at baseball. In basketball, I was a guard that played really hard, played defense and made sure I got the ball to people that could score. But I knew baseball was my ticket. So when I finally realized that, hey, I'm not going to play Major League Baseball, I thought I would really want to stay involved with athletics somehow. And so I knew that it would probably be in coaching. But even before that, going back to Coach Copeland, he made us, when we were in high school, he started the Pee Wee program, and we had to coach a group of fifth and sixth graders. He divided the fifth and sixth graders up equally, and he made each high school player coach a team throughout the Pee Wee season. Once the high school season was over in the spring, we had to coach a team. And I drew the short straw. My team didn't win a game. and we got into the tournament, and all of a sudden, they figured out how to win. We had the end of season tournament. We win two games, and we, make it to the finals. And, that gratification, not for myself, but I saw in those kids was rewarding. And so when he had us do that, and his wife, Carol, I remember her coming up to me and hugging me after the championship game and saying to me, and this is, I've always remembered this. She said, "Dell, I think you're going to be a coach." And it just kind of, as a young kid who really was, just a role player on the high school basketball team, that gave me more confidence in myself than she will probably ever know. And it stayed with me. And, I kind of went into college and thinking that I was going to go the baseball route. I ended up graduating from college, asked Coach Copeland if he could help me get on. Just so happened, Mountain Home had a in-school suspension monitors position open.
Oh, nice.
All right, there you go. This harkens back to my first employment decision. So
yeah.
Continue.
Yeah, and it was uncertified pay, which was, I think I was making about $12,000 a year. But with it came an opportunity to be the assistant on the seventh grade football team and an assistant on the high school baseball team. And I went and I interviewed and I got the job, and I was running the in-school suspension room and during the day. And then I was going to coach those sports after school. And funny story, and I'll get back to what we're talking about, but my first year in 9 months of coaching, I was an assistant on the high school baseball team at Mountain Home. And we won the state championship.
That's a good start.
Yeah, and then they asked me to help coach the Legion team, and they won the state championship. So our head baseball coach would give me a hard time and say, "You've been doing this 9 months, and you've got two rings." And so that's how fortunate I was. And I'm thinking this stuff's not that hard.
Easy. Yeah, exactly.
So I've been at Mountain Home. I've had to coach other sports. I've always been in basketball or the head girls basketball coach the entire 23 years, but there have been other sports that I've coached. And so we've won six state titles in other sports. So very, very fortunate to be part of those programs. But Coach Wood was the girls basketball coach. And I was, I was coaching seventh grade football and baseball, but that's in the fall and the spring in Arkansas. Football was in the fall, baseball in the spring. And I went into Coach Wood because she's a legend. I mean, she was known throughout the state. Like I said, she's a Hall of Fame coach, the Lady Bomber basketball program at Mountain Home, one of the best in the state. And I knocked on her door one day and introduced myself and just said, hey, I would really like to just come to practice and, you know, come to games. And we actually had a function with a lot of other coaches just a couple of weeks ago for one of our good friends. And Coach Wood told the story of how I came to the office that day. And she said, I thought he meant an occasional practice or an occasional game. She said he never missed a practice or a game. And he was on the bus every time. And so it just so happened that her assistant, who's also a dear friend of mine that was our junior high coach for years, Brenda Yancey, had decided that she was going to did not want to be the high school assistant anymore and just wanted to concentrate on the junior high. And Coach Wood asked me to be her assistant. And then 2 years later, she decided to go into administration because her daughter was finishing up her high school career at a local school and she wanted to watch her play. And she recommended me for the job. And I still, to this day, don't know how I got that job, but I'm glad that I did. And, you know, I do believe that, you know, there's somebody up there looking out for us, and this was the right thing for me.
Well, I think the lesson, at least one of them that I take away from that, is you were willing to go and knock on her door, and you weren't looking for a handout. You weren't even looking for a job in that case. You were just looking to be a part of something. And I think I sent out a quote from Coach Showalter, I think yesterday or today, I can't remember, just saying that, you know, what you have to do is you have to do the best job that you can wherever you are. And that's how you get noticed. And that's how you get opportunities. And there's a lot of coaches that, again, going back to what we talked about, who are young, that sometimes want to skip those steps. And Coach Showalter talked about in our podcast how, you know, people ask him, well, how do you get to do the things that you're doing with USA Basketball and get all these opportunities? And, you know, he said, well, look, I coached high school basketball for 42 years. You know, it's not something that came to me overnight. It's something that over time has developed for me. And I think that's the lesson that I take away from that story that you just told, which is you got to be willing to knock on doors. You got to be willing to put yourself out there, and you got to be willing to do things that maybe other people wouldn't do. Maybe somebody else wouldn't have been so bold as to go and knock on the door. And then as a result of you doing that, and then obviously making an impression upon her, that gave you the opportunity that you're still enjoying the fruits of today.
Yeah. I mean, the one thing I was going to say is it kind of reminds me of the story Billis told when he was on with us talking about, like, he was not asked to go to a meeting. He kind of was told he didn't have to go. And he's like, well, I want to go. And then they asked him the question about timing. I don't remember who was
Antoine Jameson.
Timing Antoine Jameson. He said, I want to watch Antoine Jameson. He's the player to watch because of how quickly he releases the ball. I've never seen a guy release. And ever since then, and that's kind of how he got his career started, just that one little incident, you know?
Yeah, well, just to tell you guys that I wasn't a little bit nervous when I knocked on that door would be a lie. But I think that everything that I had seen and been through in the military and in my life gave me the courage to knock on that door. And, you know, absolutely just Coach Wood is there's no way I would ever be able to repay her what she's done for me and my wife. It's just I'm so thankful. And going back to, you know, Coach Showalter, you know, isn't it amazing how we look back, you know, like I can look back at my first 23 years and be so thankful to these people. And I could talk for hours on people that I need to thank. But then to have the opportunity to meet a Don Showalter and a Dave Schaublot, those guys, and Greg White, who's right here in the same state with me, who we've known about each other, but, you know, Snow Valley being able to grow those friendships and those relationships. And, you know, here I am 23 years later, and I feel like I'm starting year one almost over again because I've got that much enthusiasm. And I think I read somewhere on Twitter, and it may have been Greg that tweeted it out, was Snow Valley is a rebirth for coaches.
Absolutely.
And man, I just think the world of those guys. And you know, I met Coach Showalter when he came to Arkansas and spoke. And I walked up to him and I said, Coach, I know you probably got a waiting list, but I would love I would love to come to Snow Valley. And he said, well, you know, send me an email. And he gave me the card and we visited. And he got me in. And I mean, I am so thankful for that. And I hope to go back every year. I mean, as long as I coach.
Yeah, for sure. Let's talk about that right now. I mean, Jason and I had the opportunity to go there this year for the first time. And, you know, it started with Coach Showalter and Greg and Nick Legalbo and Nick Schaff and Marshall Cho and all the guys, Jeff DePelto, guys that have been to Snow Valley before, Matt King, that are all invested in it and just had so many great things to say about it. And then obviously Coach Showalter was gracious enough to give us the opportunity to be able to come out. And I can't thank him enough. And I'll tell this story. I don't know if I've told it on the podcast yet, but when I went down and had the chance to work at Jay Billis's camp down in Charlotte this year, again, mm-hmm. through a connection with the podcast with John Searby, who's the director of the camp for Jay. But when I got invited to go down there, and Jay, as part of that, the first night of camp, the coaches are there a day before the players, and he has everybody over to his house. And so I was riding with a couple other coaches that I had met earlier in the day, some of them who had a car and drove with them over to Jay's house. And I get out of the car, and as I walk up to Jay's driveway, there's Coach Showalter standing in line for the food truck, waiting to get some food.
Was it steak?
I think he probably had some steak on his taco bowl. But yeah, I just walked up to him, and you know, he and I had already obviously done the podcast, and you know, we'd had some other interactions through some of the things that we do with the show, but we had never met in person. And mm-hmm. so I walked up and, you know, said hello, and you know, we're kind of introducing ourselves face to face, and walked through the line with him and sat down, and he and I ate that meal in Jay Billis's dining room together. And I'm sure there was 50 other coaches who would have, you know, gladly taken that opportunity. But again, he sat with me and some of the other people that happened to sit down at the dining room table. And just, again, I just think that he's been such a tremendous help to our podcast, and just all the things that he's done for the game of basketball through Snow Valley and USA Basketball and being a great high school coach. And we've just talked to so many people who've had these same kinds of experiences with him. It's, you know, it's incredible.
It's unbelievable. He's such an ambassador for coaches and the game. And, you know, the thing about coaching is, I think when you deal with kids and you deal with parents, and you can tell when someone's genuine. I mean, you know, and man, there's not a better person I've ever been around than Coach Showalter. And just really, really thankful. And, you know, I'm right there with you on all of that, how humble he is and how great he treats coaches and gives everybody opportunities. And, you know, I also think about the guys that I've met at Snow Valley that, you know, Doug Brotherton out of Houston and Sean Sterkel and Andy Johnson, you know, those guys, you know, I have made some friends that'll be lifelong friends that I can email and say, hey man, you know, we're looking at this situation, give me a drill for it or tell me what you would do. And it's just
Doug will draw it up on fast model for you and send it right to you.
Oh my gosh, he's awesome, man. He's awesome.
I met him down at the Billis camp. Great guy. We're gonna get him on at some point. But yeah,
he's the
fast model guy.
I actually was at USA Basketball Coaches Academy in Dallas this past weekend, and he was there with Andy, and we had a great time and visited. And you know, those are, I think, obviously professionally, those relationships benefit you. But more than anything, on a personal level, it's just you're just so thankful for them. And when you talked about Billis's camp, I remember Doug telling me that he also went. So that's, you know, I thought about that and those guys.
Yeah, that camp was incredible from the standpoint of the way that they do it is so unique and different, in that they have not only to go with the player side of the camp, but they also have a coaches development program that the coaches go and participate. And so when the players go to lunch or the players go back to the dorm, the coaches don't go to the cafeteria and eat like they do at Snow Valley. Instead, the coaches stay and they bring in a speaker, or they have a program, or there's something going on from a coach education standpoint. And as a result of that, then, you know, I think they had 100 kids and there was 50 coaches there. So you have a, you know, you have a two player to every one coach, player coach ratio, and that's I've never seen anything like that. So they just do a tremendous job, and to have the opportunity to go first to Jay's camp in June, and then to turn around and go back and have an opportunity to go to Snow Valley. I mean, I can't imagine two better places if you're a player to want to go to improve, you know, to improve yourself. And then same thing as a coach. I mean, to a man in both places, just the quality of the people that we met was just, again, outstanding. And it's that to me is always the indicator as you go. And, you know, you can, anybody can run a camp, anybody can put together a league, anybody can do this or that, but really it's the quality of the people that are involved in your enterprise that tells you what the people that are in charge are all about, and the quality of the people in those two places are outstanding. So talk a little bit about your experience at Snow Valley and what it was like for you, what you took away from it, what you liked, what it was all about for you.
Well, you know, I literally, you know, I met, I'm on the Arkansas High School Coaches Association committee, and part of my job is to introduce speakers, or if a coach needs to be picked up at the airport that flies in, I go get them, or, you know, make sure they get to lunch, whatever. And so I had met Coach Showalter there, and the following week was Snow Valley. And so, you know, when I get the email from him that says, hey, you're in on June such and such, I can't remember the exact date, you need to go to USA Basketball and do all this stuff to get certified. And so I'm coming home from the Arkansas High School Coach Association clinic, which I'd been gone a week. And my wife is actually our junior high coach, which is a blessing. And so she goes to the clinic as well. Well, I tell her, I said, hey, when we get home, I think I'm going to go to Iowa. And she's like, and I told her all about it. So literally, I'm telling you guys, I pulled into Mountain Home, Arkansas, which is about a three and a half hour drive from Little Rock, and do my laundry and pack and leave the next morning for a 9.5 hour drive to Waverly, Iowa. And I was and felt like it was a 30-minute drive because I was so fired up to be there. And went in cold turkey, get out of my car, and the first person I run into is Tate Flock, who I knew because he had also spoke at our clinic. And, him and Coach Showalter spoke back to back. But I just saw basketball at its purest form. And, you know, we always, you know, we know the standards and we know what's important. But I will just use footwork as an example. You know, we all know how important that is, but I think what Snow Valley did for me is it wasn't that I wasn't working on footwork, and it had people say things like, you know, that team is so fundamental and yada, yada, yada. But a simpler and just an easier way to teach it that was probably more effective. And, you know, I throw out Coach Locke's box drills, and, you know, just being able to teach your players those steps, and they go through that pre-practice every day, just makes them better players all over the court. But just the purest form of basketball, professional level, it just is a PhD, and personal level, it just helps you make connections with people who not only will make you a better coach, but just the character of people that help you be a better person. And to me, that's the best way I can define Snow Valley.
Yeah, I agree with you 100% that, like I said earlier, the people are really what make it. And then you pile on top of that all of the organization that it takes to put that together and make it run smoothly. The week we were there, I think there were 425 boys there. And the fact that you can manage all them and get them to places where they're supposed to be and have the schedule organized and have the right number of coaches in the right places to be able to teach the skills that they're trying to teach. I love the idea of having that one master clinician and explain the drill, and then sending people out to their basket to work the drills with the other coaches who are there to help. And I really enjoyed that. I told Greg after when we did our little wrap-up show, that the thing that I really enjoyed, because I do a bunch of camps here where I'm the guy in charge, and so I'm kind of coming up with the ideas and doing the organization and putting together the drills. And for me, in a way, it was really refreshing to go and have somebody else do all that organization and put together the drills, and then just give it to me and say, hey, here, teach this drill.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, all right, great. I'd love to do that. And then I'm learning some new things along the way. And just like every coach, when you're there, you write down some notes about this drill or this quote or something that somebody said, or just a slightly way, like you talked about, a slightly way of different way of doing something that maybe you've done before, but you just see it in a different light, or you see somebody that puts a little tweak on it, or you see somebody that uses slightly different vocabulary than what you might have used before. And those are the things that you pick up and you have an opportunity to do when you're at Snow Valley. And then, of course, you got the time during meals when you're sitting with, whether it's Coach Locke or Coach Schlaubar or whoever it is, you know, people that you meet, and they're telling stories. And that part of it is invaluable too, because you know, sometimes as a coach, you mentioned earlier that you get caught up in the day-to-day minutiae of your job, and you're worried about, well, when's the next open gym and what are we going to do for this workout? And it's nice just to be able to sit back and share stories with people who have, again, not identical experiences, but similar experiences to what you have, and to be able to share just the joy of what the game of basketball is all about.
Yeah. And, you know, talking about camp, we have a big camp here too. And you talk about feeling like, hey, you better raise the bar. I mean, my gosh, it was so good. And with the way they did things, I'm totally going to revamp my camp. And talk about being fortunate. Our leader of our section was Matt King.
So, oh, that's fantastic.
I mean, hey, what a great guy. And actually, the night that we got there, you know, I'm totally lost. I'm like the freshman walking into orientation. And, you know, and so, and of course, I had met Coach Showalter. So, you know, they take the coaches out to eat. And I actually got to sit across from him and his grandson. So there was some comfort there because I had met him. And he was so, you know, he's so welcoming, and along with everybody else. But then I met Matt King that night, and we had some really, really good conversations that night about coaching. And so Matt immediately kind of, you know, my adrenaline was going, and I was, you know, I was nervous. I wanted to do a good job. And he kind of, you know, we talked about some things, and I was apprehensive, you know, still a little bit nervous, but excited going in the next morning. But I was, you know, confident that, you know, hey, you're supposed to be here. And it was a good time.
Yeah, Matt's great. We had him on very, very early in the podcast, and we I know he's been really busy with all the things he's doing with the Arizona Basketball Coaches Association.
Yeah.
He's got some great stuff going on there. And actually, last time we talked to Greg, he's like, you got to reach back out to Matt and get him back on the show. So I just got back from vacation, so we've been working on the upcoming guest list, and so we got to reach out to Matt again at some point. But yeah, he was probably of anybody we talked to, he was the most, I don't know if intellectual is the right word, but just his thought process about how the game of basketball from the youth level all the way up through the highest levels should be structured in order to make it the best experience for kids. You know, you could tell that he put a lot of time and thought into making sure that the experience of the game was the best for what each individual kid was looking to get out of the game. And that to me was probably the most impressive part of our conversation with him.
Yeah. We're really involved with our Top Flight program, which we're the Mountain Home Lady Bombers, which so our Pee-wee program is called the Top Flight program.
Nice.
And, it's kindergarten through sixth grade. And, you know, just the USA basketball standards and the things I learned at Snow Valley and visiting with Coach Showalter and then visiting with Matt. I mean, you talk about when I got home and got to talk to our board about, and they were doing, I'll give them credit, they were doing a lot of things that they needed to be doing. But, you know, the things that Matt talks about condensing the court, you know, playing with a smaller ball, lowering the goes. And we were lowering the goes and playing with a smaller ball, but we were still playing on 94 feet court.
Right.
And so there were a lot of things that, that, you know, I got from Matt that I want to use with our youth program. And He's got it going on over in Arizona. There's no doubt. And you guys definitely need to talk to him again, because I got to visit with him a lot. It was right after they had their big showcase for the college, the high schools and the college coaches coming in. And there's some pretty cool stories there.
Yeah. What he's doing there, I think, is tremendous for high school basketball players. I think that hopefully that he continues to have the success, and that particular format will spread from Arizona into other states, so that more high school coaches and high school players can experience what he has going. Let me ask you about your youth program. I know you mentioned back a little while ago when we were talking about how when you were a player that you got an opportunity to coach those young kids that were part of your community back then. And so do your varsity players, do kids in your program go back down and work with the younger kids as part of your youth program?
Absolutely. Absolutely. They're involved in the top flight program. Will work kindergarten first and second grade first in the fall. And we'll actually have a free clinic where we will bring in kids and youth coaches and talk about, I feel like that footwork, shooting and passing, and I will throw ball handling in there, are the things that we really need to teach the younger kids, kindergarten through sixth grade. And I really don't even think it's that important for kindergartners through third graders to even be playing basketball. But if they are, it better be fun and it better be a good experience or they won't come back. And so we really have taken a lot of that stuff, and our high school kids help teach it. They help with the sessions. They'll have a session on a Sunday and a session like on a Thursday, and they'll do that for a time period with the younger kids, kindergarten through second grade, and then they'll have third and fourth, and then they'll have fifth and sixth. And our high school kids, unless we're in our season and we are on the road somewhere, but if we're home, they are working top flight and giving back. And top flight also is they help us with it, because what they do is they say, you know, let's say that we go to the state tournament and we want to take our kids out to eat at a place that doesn't, maybe our budget per player doesn't cover it. So top flight will help pay for that. So they give back, and we don't help because we're expecting that. You know, we help for the program. We talk to our kids all the time that you're not only playing for the girls sitting to your left and your right, but you're playing for those that played before you and those that are coming after you leave. And our kids they're great. They go and they work, and we're going to do, you know, a lot of free clinics. I think that kids get nickel and dimed to death with basketball today. And, I know that when I was a kid, that my mom would not have been able to afford for me to go work with a trainer, so to speak, for an hour. So I really want to make sure that we're reaching out and touching those kids that can't afford that. And you know, it's for the, it also, it helps develop people and helps the future of your program.
I agree 100%. I think that's one of the things I've said before, that when I was a kid, as a player, that, you know, when I was coming up as a kid in elementary school, I had high school varsity and junior varsity players that coached me. Mm-hmm. And then when I got to high school, I had the opportunity to then coach kids who were elementary school players. And I still have friends from both sides of that equation.
Sure.
Guys that coached me that I'm still friends with, and guys that I coached that I'm still friends with. And unfortunately, I think just the way that the whole youth basketball scene has shifted, you don't see that nearly as often. I think it was pretty standard procedure back when I was growing up in the 80s. And now I think it's more rare that the high school program is directly involved. I mean, I know there are some programs that do it, but you don't see it nearly as much. You see far more parent coach teams and adult coach teams. And there's obviously a place for that. But I think the connection between a 17, 18-year-old kid and an 8, 9, 10-year-old kid, to me, that's something that is priceless. You can't put a price tag on that. And you mentioned about the experience should be fun. I think by putting that 16, 17, 18-year-old kid with a younger kid, you're almost guaranteeing that both of those groups are going to have fun, because they're not going to be worried about, you know, this or that or the pressure of winning. They're all kids and they all want to have fun. I think that's really important. Can you talk for some coaches that are out there listening, just how the youth program there in Mountain Home is, how it's constructed? What's the organization look like for how you put the whole program together, and then kind of what your role is in making sure it all runs the way you want it to?
Well, my role is to help the people that are in charge, and we have, and Matt Martin has been a staple, and there's several other people, Scott Bryant on the boys' side, and they're just so – Matt Martin has come in and taken over the program and had a vision, and actually his twin daughters, Emma and Abby, will be seniors for me this year, and he had a vision to start a PB program, and they called it Top Flight, and I cannot take credit for any of that, because they started it. And our athletic director, Coach Mitch Husky, he actually was the boys basketball coach, and he had a lot to do with starting as well. And we were running a fifth and sixth grade PB program at Mountain Home, but we were trying to do it during basketball season, and it was just really, really hard because our coaches were gone, our players were either practicing or, you know, had to get home and do homework. So they decided to divide it up into little segments, and they do have parents and volunteers who are involved, and we meet with them at the beginning of the year. And my role is just to aid, and I'm on the board of directors along with our boys coach. And we just help with the process and the standards and what we want and how we want them to do it. And so we go to the board meetings, and then we're involved in the sessions as much as we can. And our kids are there, and there might be an adult coaching a team, but they'll have a Lady Bomber basketball player assisting. It's not about playing a lot of games. They have sessions where we concentrate on fundamentals. So we have people just like Snow Valley working on those fundamentals in stations, and then they'll play a game or two at the end of the night. So those players are involved. But my role is simply to advise and to give input, and, you know, and then I just want to be there and let the little kids see me as much as possible that I'm supportive. And then going back to the girls, the high school girls, I mean, we remember this feeling. Those, and I tell the girls this all the time, those little ones, you are like their hero. You know, they think that you're Superman. And so there's so much that goes into those kids being there and teaching those little kids. But biggest thing for me and my role is to be there, to help, and to let them know, hey, we don't need to be playing zone. You know, the younger kids, kindergarten to probably fourth grade, don't need to be going much more than 3-on-3. You know, we need to shorten the court for the little ones so that you don't get some first grader that comes in there that has to run 94-foot sprints for 20 minutes.
You don't want them just to be jogging? You want them to actually play basketball? What's the problem there, Dell?
They walk out the door and say, Mom, I never touched the ball, and all I did was run up and down. You know, that's not fun to them. And when you look at the other things that we're competing against in girls basketball, you know, even including my daughters who were coaches' daughters, you know, they wanted to cheer when they were little. You know, that's what, as a little girl, that's what they see and that's what they want to do. Now, they both ended up being involved in basketball and volleyball, and they didn't end up cheering, but that's what was really appealing to them at a young age. And then you look at, and my youngest daughter played volleyball, so I'm not talking bad about volleyball when I say this, but the truth is, and our assistant coach is the high school volleyball coach, and she does a great job, and she's involved in basketball, and she played basketball and volleyball in high school. But I tell her all the time, you got to help me out here, you know, as the head volleyball coach, you got to make sure that they play both, you know, and encourage them to play both. And we both do the same for each other. But I said, think about it. In volleyball, they don't have to touch each other. They don't have to be physical with each other. They don't have to get their heart rate up to an uncomfortable level. And they get to put wear ribbons and glitter and do cheers between each play.
Yep.
And I said, what little girl is not going to love that? And so, you know, she's very smart and intelligent because she, you know, gets them at a young age, but she's doing a great job of helping us get them to play both. But we got to make sure it's fun for them. And getting back to our topic, we have to make sure that basketball is fun for them at a young age, or they're just going to go play volleyball, or they're just going to go to cheer. And so that's what we have to do.
Yeah, I think what I hear you saying, your overarching theme of what you're trying to do with your complete program is develop a spirit of cooperation between all these different pieces. So you have the cooperation with your board that's heading up Top Flight and making sure that that's all working together and that you guys are on the same page in terms of what you expect from kids at those ages and what you can expect from them and what you need to provide for them. And then on the other side of it, once you get up into high school, talking about the cooperation amongst coaches who are part of the various programs at the school, making sure that coaches don't get territorial over their athletes, which,
right.
I know that there's been places where I've seen that happen, where this coach only wants their players to play their sport. And if that doesn't happen, then, you get into some dicey situations. Yeah. And, you know, we've talked to coaches on both sides of that spectrum that, you know, a lot of people are fortunate like you that they're in places where coaches understand the whole thing, how it all works and how it should fit together and how it should be for the benefit of the kids. And then we've talked to other coaches where that unfortunately isn't the case, where coaches do get possessive of their athletes and only want them playing their sport year round. And that can be tough for sure. So it sounds like you have a good situation surrounding what you have with your program.
Yeah, and, you know, that's one of the things that I try to talk to our young coaches about that come in. And if you're trying to, and I'm going to tell you that as a young coach, I got caught up a little bit in, you know, they need to be playing year-round if they're going to be as good as they can be for a 2 or 3 year period. But then I look back, I played two sports, and it really was the only two sports that our high school had. And if I hadn't played baseball, I probably wouldn't have had the help in college that I had financially. And if coaches, and I won't hesitate to tell a coach this, but if coaches are, if they're somehow, whether it's, you know, manipulating the situation to get a kid to just play one sport, then they're not doing it for the kid. They're doing it for themselves. And that's the one thing that we have to understand. And, you know, we've had some kids, you know, some good players recruited, and I've never had a college coach that didn't ask me what other sport do they play. And, you know, I think they like for them to play other sports instead of sitting on their thumb in the off season. But I absolutely encourage them to play other sports, and we try to make sure that everybody else on our staff does as well.
Yeah. What I always say is whatever that decision is made about one sport, multiple sports, it should be driven by the kid.
That's right.
And if the kid's making the decision that, hey, I only want to play basketball and I want to do it year round and I want to be at every single workout and every single thing that my basketball coach does, and I want to play AAU in the spring and I want to be in a fall league, and great. If that's what the kid wants,
right.
Tremendous. But I think where we run into problems is where you have an adult dictating to a kid, well, if you want to play on my basketball team, you can't play volleyball. Or if you want to play on my football team, you can't play basketball. And I think that's really where, again, we forget what it's all about. You only get a chance to be a high school athlete once. And if you have the opportunity to play multiple sports, great. I get it. You get it, I'm sure, as a competitive person. You know, you'd like to have your kids. Hey, I'd like to have my kids 12 months a year. The chances of them improving in that sport are probably better. But ultimately, is it about my one loss record as a coach, or is it about the kid and their overall experience? And I think that's something that we all have to remember. And it's tough because we know to a certain degree you get judged by your wins and losses. And people can say that we don't, but the reality is in most cases we do. And so it's definitely something that a coach has to balance out. But I always go back to erring on the side of the kids making the decision, then it's a good decision. If it's a decision that's being made by an adult, then I'm not a fan of it.
And we have those kids that just want to play basketball. And that's
right,
fine.
For sure.
Or those kids
for sure.
that just want to play softball, but it's got to be their choice. Now, I think that, you know, as veteran coaches, we can guide younger coaches. And I will say that I do believe that the entire Mountain Home coaching staff is on the same page, and we're very, very good about that. Now, it probably would take a whole nother podcast when we start talking about the parenting side.
Right.
And how, you know, they get into specialization and different things like that. But you know, I won't go there, but it's a totally different animal.
Well, let's just say this. The nice part of what's happening now is I think there's more and more information coming out regarding the fact that starting to specialize in a sport when you're 8 years old is not a positive for your kid.
No.
And as that's becoming a more mainstream, it's becoming a more mainstream issue, and there's just more and more solid information and research that's showing that that's not a good thing, that hopefully that will get back to parents. I say this all the time on the show, but I think that, to me, the biggest challenge in youth basketball, the biggest challenge in providing the right type of environment for kids is the education of parents and helping parents to understand what it is that their kids should be getting out of it, what they should be looking for in a coach, in a program, in an experience. And too often, especially when somebody is getting into it with their first kid, or they don't know what they don't know. And so they end
right.
up,
that's right.
They end up in places that maybe aren't the best for their child because they're chasing something that the person next to him is chasing, and nobody really knows what it is that they're chasing, but everybody's chasing the same thing. And that's where I think sometimes you see problems occur. And I really think that if there's one gap that I'd like to try to bridge somehow is to educate parents of elementary school kids about, hey, here's what you should be looking for in a basketball experience for your kid. And it may be different. Every 8 year old's not the same. You know, I think Matt King did a great job on our show of talking about that and how, you know, one 8 year old might just want to play with his friends and shoot half court shots. And another 8 year old may want to take the game a little bit more seriously and play and be more organized and learn. And
sure.
There should be an opportunity for both kids to be able to get the experience that they need. And that's a difficult task to figure out how to do.
Well, and, you know, as coaches, as parents, we don't necessarily get any do-overs. And,
right, exactly.
You know, all we can do is learn. And I think that everything that you just said is spot on. And I honestly do not think kids have changed. I really don't. I think parents have gotten a lot more difficult, but I think that social media and things like that, there's good and there's bad, but it just seems like that the negatives are outweighing the positives in a lot of areas. But, you know, just we try really hard to communicate with our parents. We have a parent meeting, and we try to cover a lot of different things. And because it goes back to everything that we've been talking about, which is what is best for the kid.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so let me ask you this. If you look back on the totality of your head coaching career, what's something that you feel like you've gotten a lot better at, or something that you've learned over the course of your career that you're much better at today than you were on day one when you stepped in as a coach? I'm sure there's a bunch of things, but let's try to pick out maybe one or two things that you feel you're a lot better at today than you were when you started.
I think two things, and we talked about this earlier. I think that early in my career, I worked really hard and didn't get anything done. And I think that as I've gotten older, I've learned how to, you know, take more advantage of the time that we spend working hard and making sure that we're getting stuff done, especially in the area of, you know, the fundamentals and things like that. But I think the thing that I hope that I've gotten better at more than anything is when I don't like the way a kid is, so to speak, if that's the grammatically correct, when I don't like something about a kid, there's a reason why that kid is that way. And so I have to try to figure out why is that kid this way. And then I got to try to figure out how to communicate with that kid across from me and get the best out of them, because everybody grows up in a different situation and everybody's raised different. And that doesn't mean they're all going to come in day one and it's going to gel and be perfect. It's going to take a while. And, I just read a quote that I thought was kind of witty, yesterday. It said, when Noah built the ark, it wasn't raining, you know, and so it takes time. And you got to be prepared and you got to invest and if you got a kid who's not getting it, and we all know what it is and what we're talking about, then you got to figure out why. Early as a young coach, I'd be like, to heck with them. I'm moving on, I think as I've gotten a little bit older, I've learned how to try to help that kid and figure out why they are the way they are. And I think that's it's getting tougher and tougher, to get buy-in on the total team concept of things that we have to do to be successful. But figuring out how to do that by reaching each kid individually is, I would hope, is something that I've gotten better at.
So how do you go about reaching each kid individually? Is that just by paying closer attention to what they say, what they do, what they're doing in school? Is that through individual conversations? How do you go about building that kind of rapport and relationship and understanding of each one of your individual players? Because I think if, again, we go back 25 or 30 years, there was a lot more my way or the highway coaches where, I'm coaching everybody the same way. And if you're not on board with this train, then, I don't have time for you. Now, I think, and again, a credit to the coaching profession, that it's evolved to the point now where we understand just what you said, that kids have different backgrounds, and yet we still have to figure out, okay, I understand this kid has a different background, but how do I go about understanding them better so I can coach them better? So how do you go about doing that?
Well, one of the things I say at our parent meeting is, when I talk to you, obviously we're going to talk about basketball as far as maybe I'm at a junior high game and a senior high parent walks over to me and wants to have a conversation. Well, basketball is what brought us together. So we're going to talk about basketball, but I want them to talk to me about something other than basketball, about their daughter. Like, I would like to know other things that their daughter's interested in, because that helps me build that relationship with that kid. I try really hard, and I can't remember, it may have been Chris Beard that I heard this from on an interview, but we've got 12 players on our high school varsity team, and I have a stack of 3x5 index cards on my desk, and I've got every kid's name on each one of those cards. And I try to talk to 3 of them a day in my office about something other than basketball. And so that's one thing we try to do. And then, of course, all coaches at the beginning of practice, I think, you walk around each go and you have a pre-practice routine, but you walk around each go and you try to talk to kids and you just, ask them about their family and get to know them. But the biggest thing is communication, and then having assistant coaches who do the same thing, and trying to get to know them more than just a basketball player, and then figuring out, what motivates them and so on and so forth. Whereas you said used to, it was, hey, this is how we're doing it. And I think you still have to have those standards in certain areas, but my way or the highway in every single area doesn't work anymore.
Yeah, absolutely not. All right, I want to wrap things up, Del, by asking you about just the things that your program is built on. If somebody comes and watches Mountain Home girls basketball and they watch your game, what are they going to take away from seeing your team, your program? Just explain to us what your program is all about, what you want it to stand for, and what you hope people see when they come and watch you play a game.
Well, I use this analogy with the girls all the time. And if someone were passing through Mountain Home and they were just a basketball junkie and they love basketball and they just stopped, didn't know any of them, didn't know me personally, and just said, hey, coach, can I watch practice? But they really knew the game. I would hope that they would say that we work harder than anybody or just as hard as anybody else. I would hope that they would say that we're disciplined, that we treat each other right, and that we play the game the right way. And, you know, those are the things that we really hang our hat on. And, you know, I could get into, you know, our philosophy defensively and offensively, but before you can be good at those things, I think you got to be better at the first things that I mentioned.
Those are some great pillars to build your program on. Before we wrap up, Dell, I want to give you a chance to share your contact information. So anybody who's listening to the show, if they want to reach out to you just to say thanks or to ask you a basketball question, they can do that. So go ahead and share your contact information and then we'll wrap things up.
Well, I have a Twitter account and I have an Instagram account, but I'm gonna be honest with you. I have those just to keep up with everybody else. I'm not a big poster. I don't post things. I just don't. And I probably need to be better at that, but my wife will post things about our program to promote our kids. And so if you find those things, you know, find me on Instagram or Twitter, and I can't even tell you what my, you know, whatever,
we'll do some research when we put it in the sure. show notes. We'll get our crack research staff, Jason, on that.
Yeah. But I will give you my email and my cell phone number, and I'm open to anybody calling me, and I would love to learn from everybody else as well. But my cell number is 870-421-1090, and my email is dleonard@mhbombers, like the airplane bomber. So dleonard@mhbombers.com.
Dell, we can't thank you enough for spending an hour and 20 minutes here with us tonight. It's been a lot of fun getting a chance to know you, talk to you about some common experiences and people that we know. And I think anybody out there who's been listening, I'm sure, was able to pick up some things from what you've said to make themselves a better coach or a better parent or a better player. So we can't thank you enough. And to everyone out there, we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
The Hoopheads Podcast is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.